All right, as is usual here on our Wednesday Daily Audio Stash, we like to sit down with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany, and also the author of the new book, Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Mitch Earlywine, welcome back to the Stash.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, let's start off with your book here, The Parent's Guide to Marijuana. I just got my copy here, and it's a nice book, about 100 pages, pretty easy to read, nice and conversational. Tell folks what you're trying to accomplish with this book.
The bottom line on this is a lot of folks my age, Russ, are having their kids come up and starting to ask about marijuana-related questions, and they get stuck in certain situations where they know they don't want their kids to use marijuana, but they know that the lies that they learned in the DARE program or in other educational efforts are clearly not something they want to repeat. And so I just walk through the literature and talk to them about, first of all, listening first, and then making sure that the kids get to ask all the questions they want to ask, and then disputing all the myths that we were all told about things like amotivation or the gateway theory. But then jumping right in with the data that really are pretty compelling about how marijuana in the developing brain is just not a good combination, and then without being alarmist, explaining that the possibility of lowering IQ or changing the way the brain is structured by smoking heavy really early in life is really there, and then listening to their teens and talking to them about things they can do as an alternative without having to say, oh, you're never going to touch this or you're going to go to hell.
Yeah. Now, I imagine a lot of parents also, we're talking about sometimes the baby boom generation here, talking to their teenagers about marijuana. And a lot of them, you know, they dabbled a time or two or three or 12 when they were younger. How do you help a parent who's feeling like a hypocrite, perhaps, to try to tell their kid not to try marijuana when they were teenagers, they tried it and they didn't turn out so bad?
Well, the interesting thing is we didn't have the data back then. And so as much as I am, you know, completely happy about folks using cannabis in their adult life, it really just isn't a good idea early in life because of some of these alterations in brain structure and the potential to decrease IQ. And this argument with teens about I'm the adult, so I can do it, you're the teen, you can't, has never, you know, won a whole lot of plugs from the younger folks, but I think drawing the distinction that later in life there's an opportunity to use this without any harm is a seed you can plant with them, and they'll never in an argument say, okay, you're right, fine, I won't. But I think what often happens, particularly if you're willing to listen to their side in a non-judgmental way, is you get them thinking about the idea that maybe this is something that they shouldn't do now. And if you're not saying you can never do it, but just I want you to wait until your brain is developed, for some reason they find that argument a little more compelling, a little more something that they can tolerate. And then, you know, if you don't gloat, if you actually listen to them and hear their side and let them talk what they want to talk about, not only do they take home this message, but you're also really building your relationship. And you discover that, in fact, teens are delightful little people and that you have a really neat relationship with your own children, and in some ways that's a buffer against all the problems that folks could have with marijuana early in life anyway. And so you've really laid a nice foundation for not just a little drug prevention program, but preventing problems in a whole bunch of domains.
Absolutely. Yes, I look back to my teenage years. I grew up, you know, in the early 80s as a teenager, and I can tell you the method that doesn't work is the Nancy Reagan just say no method. You tell a teenager just say no, and the first thing they want to say is, oh, yeah? So.
Well, we had a big just say no on premarital sex in Missouri where I grew up, and so, of course, when I had a date, I often said, do you mind if we do X? You could just say no. And meaning they could say, no, they don't mind.
Well, yes. Now, another issue that a lot of parents are facing, especially, or, you know, particularly in the states that have decriminalized or allowed the use of medical marijuana, is that we may have some parents who are using medical marijuana completely legally who have very young children. And how do you tell, you know, getting away from the teenagers and talking about the very young kids, how can these parents explain their use of marijuana when the little kids are going to be getting the message that that's criminal and that's illegal in a lot of ways?
I've really been impressed with folks, even, you know, 5 to 7 years old, getting the distinction between medicine and drug, illicit drug, pretty well. The other thing I'm finding just informally is folks who use the vaporizer, for some reason, their kids seem to see that as some kind of special instrument for the administration of medicine, whereas folks who are smoking joints are having a harder time making this argument, in part because that's sort of the way it's depicted at their drug schools, if you will, their little educational programs. Karen O'Keefe of Marijuana Policy Project and I did a big review of the states that have medical marijuana laws and those that don't, and there's actually no difference in teen and you know adolescent use when you compare those states. So I don't feel like this is a thing that should have a dramatic impact in some kind of weird negative way. And I think the other issue is when parents really emphasize the change in their symptoms. So I have a friend right now going through chemotherapy with kids, and she, you know, gets really, really nauseated. And when they see her feel better, there's no way they're going to argue against something that's made, you know, their mom basically capable of eating food and staying alive. And it's funny how just by sharing how you actually feel about the symptoms can really get them on your side in a way that nothing else could.
Yeah, and I'm going to encourage everyone out there listening, if you're a parent and you're looking for a way to talk to your kids about marijuana, this book is a definite help, The Parent's Guide to Marijuana. It's available out at Amazon.com. We've also got links to it up on our Stash blog at stash.normal.org. And Dr. Earlywine, I can't let you go without attacking something that that we talked about on last week's Stash. Another one of these alarmist headlines. You know, when people see the word doctor with these reefer madness headlines, they tend to give it a little credence. And this was a story that came out of Toronto, Canada. This was a trial that's going on where a man was in a psychotic state and beat his girlfriend to death. And this doctor who got up on the stand to testify, his name was Dr. Stephen Hucker, said that it was highly likely that the guy was in a psychotic state, and that what was partially to blame for his psychotic state is, he says, his mental illness had been induced by chronic marijuana use. And he told the court that he was a daily user of marijuana, and that studies have determined that frequent users of cannabis have double the risk of developing mental illness or schizophrenia. So I thought we'd just throw that at you and see what you could do with that.
I sometimes just don't know where to begin with these anymore. It's really funny. Schizophrenia itself is an incredibly rare disorder and isn't at all doubled by the use of marijuana. And anybody who thinks that marijuana would cause aggression has obviously never smoked any, so it's just such a preposterous thing there. The bottom line on this mental illness literature is, yeah, you do see some statistically significant increases in mental illness in folks who use marijuana really early in life pretty heavy, but the increase is about a 40% increase. And then when you start looking at the way they've actually assessed this psychosis, you realize it's kind of a joke. So there are 5 studies now linking marijuana to something called schizotypal personality disorder, which is a kind of schizophrenia light, if you will, where you report some odd experiences or some weird beliefs. Well, I just never really believed it and looked at some of the items on the questionnaire for assessing schizotypal personality disorder, and found that in my sample, yeah, the marijuana users were higher on these questionnaires, but there was one question that it turned out was biased against the cannabis users, and it was, I use words in unusual ways. Well, Russ, anybody who's ever busted a blunt at 420 with his homies is certainly going to say, I use words in unusual ways, and it has nothing to do with being psychotic. It just has to do with being part of a subculture, if you will, with its own slang. And the other studies along these lines are a little better done, but end up making some of the same curious mistakes. The other thing is there's a new study out actually showing that cigarettes has a 1.6, a 60% increase in mental illness when you look at the data very closely longitudinally, and I don't see anybody saying that cigarettes are causing anybody's mental illness and turning them to aggression or anything like that. The bottom line is, essentially, I don't think marijuana causes psychosis, But I think some psychotic people do smoke it. And that's how we've gotten basically cause and effect all confused yet again.
Yeah, that was always my interpretation sometimes of these studies, is this idea that how are you controlling for the fact that, you know, if you were a schizophrenic person, wouldn't you be more likely to want to try to quiet those voices somehow? Maybe they're self-medicating rather than the medication causing the psychosis.
Well, and in fact, some of the longitudinal studies have done a decent job at trying to control for that, but then they make some other mistakes in basically drawing such a wide net around what is psychosis that you realize a whole lot of people who shouldn't be labeled in the psychotic group end up in there anyway. The biggest meta-analysis that came out in The Lancet last year basically walks through seven different studies and points out that basically six of the seven didn't require any impairment at all. And I discuss this set of work at length on YouTube on my talk from the Normal Conference last year. So if folks want to look that up, I go into pretty much detail about that literature, and I think they'll get a kick out of it.
Well, excellent. Dr. Earlywine, thanks again for joining us here every Wednesday on the Daily Audio Stash. And I want to remind everyone, we're still having our contest. If you'd like to win a copy of The Parent's Guide to Marijuana, we'll be giving away three free copies to people that send in their questions for Dr. Earlywine. So please send your questions to 420research@gmail.com, or you can send them directly to the Stash here at stash@normal.org. We'll pick three questions for Dr. Earlywine to cover. So parents, if you've got questions about your children and marijuana, please send them in, and you could win a copy of The Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine, again, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday on The Stash.
Looking forward to it.